Okay, so in Perikei, in the fifth chapter, we learned in depth the greatness of learning Torah, even above keeping mitzvahs, right? And he explained that because the general idea from Perik Dalet, from the fourth chapter, was that Torah and mitzvahs, meaning our thought, speech, and action being expressed through the thought, speech, and action of Torah and mitzvahs, learning Torah, emotion, connection to Hashem, inspiring mitzvahs, and so on and so forth, speaking Torah, speaking davening, all that connects us with Hashem, dafka when it's done in this world. And that's an amazing, unbelievable thing, because the Zohar tells us, I mean, we know many psukim he brings, that no human mind can, or no person can grasp Hashem, nothing can grasp Hashem. Less machshava tfisa beklal, there's no thought that can grasp Hashem, where unless we do it through Torah and mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs, erasev kut shebricho kul achad, Torah and Hashem are one. Therefore, when we engage, when we connect to Torah and mitzvahs, we're connecting to Hashem Himself. At the end, he said, it doesn't matter that he gave the whole thing, it traveled down on many levels to enclose itself in, to express itself, manifest itself through human terminology, but it's still the same Torah, the same Hashem, and so on. So the idea was, the mashal, the analogy they gave was that like a king who's wearing many, many clothes, and you embrace the king, it doesn't matter how many clothes he's wearing, you're still embracing the king. Okay. Then he said, sorry. Getting there. No, it's just a residue of a cough, of a cold. Then he said, in Perek Hey, he said that there's something greater even with Torah, because the bond is stronger. And then he gave this whole thing about that when we learn something, when you learn something, you really get lost in an idea. You have grasped the idea, but the idea has also grasped you. So you are, the idea is like wearing you, and you are wearing the idea. So it's an unbelievable interconnected bond that you don't find a similar thing in the physical realm. And therefore, he went in great detail to explain that's exactly what happens when we study Torah. And Torah is that wisdom of Hashem. By the way, he said such an important thing. I just want to repeat it because it's such an important idea. People often talk about the relevance of Torah. So it doesn't have to have relevance. That's the point. Obviously, it has relevance, and there's so much that is relevant in Torah to every part of our life. But the point is that it doesn't matter if it's relevant or not, and that's why he went to this unbelievable idea that we often learn in Gemara, a scenario that would never happen and will never happen. Why? It doesn't matter. It's the wisdom of Hashem, which starts long before that scenario. It expresses itself through that scenario, and it's irrelevant whether the scenario will happen or not. We have this even with mitzvahs. I mean, there are two mitzvahs in the Torah about which the Gemara says, never happened, that will never happen. The wayward son, the Ben Soira Omeira, and the Ir HaNidachas, the city that serves Avodah Zorah, the city that serves idol worship, which has to be destroyed. But both these mitzvahs have such complicated conditions for the scenario to qualify to actually fulfill the mitzvah is statistically impossible. To the point where the Gemara says, La hoyo v'lo yiyye. Never happened, never will happen. So why is it there? Yagdil Torah v'yadir, let Torah become great. Meaning, in other words, it's Torah. It's Torah, it's the wisdom of Hashem. Sharpening our minds, getting lost in godly concepts. But that's not the only thing. I mean, that's in terms of whole mitzvahs. Then there are even mitzvahs which are practically relevant, of which certain scenarios or details discussed in the Gemara will never happen, or never happened, because they're just so hypothetical. And doesn't make a difference, because we're learning Torah to be connected to Hashem, and in this prayer, that's what he says, is Torah lishmo, that's Torah for the sake of Torah, for the sake of Hashem, to be one with Hashem, right? Then he said that's why the Torah is called food, because we internalize it, it's right? So when we do mitzvahs, mitzvahs are makif, meaning mitzvahs, we get dressed in the mitzvah. The mitzvah surrounds us, but we don't eat the mitzvah, even spiritually speaking. Right, so that part is there. It's still a major connection. But Torah is pnimi, it's internalized. Okay. And that's why he said that mozoin, food, Torah is called food, lechem, whereas mitzvahs are called levushim, right? Our garments. Both connect us to Hashem, but the internalization is through Torah. And he said that's also what happens when we come to the world to come after we pass away from this world. That even when a person is worthy to come to Gan Eden and to enjoy the revelation aspect of Hashem's glory, which happens in the world to come, you need food and you need clothing for that. And that's the mitzvahs and Torah mitzvahs that we bring from this world. Right? Now, he ends off, we didn't do this last part, and that's the brackets, and I want to go through it with you at the end of the parak. Hey. He says, Vahamot, you see that brackets at the end of the fifth parak? It's page Yud, page 10, if you've got a proper regular Tanya. Otherwise, just the end, the brackets at the end of the fifth chapter. And he says, Vahamozoin hi bechinas or pnimi, Vahalavushim bechinas makifin. When he talked about food of the soul and clothing of the soul, right? Food is what we call in Chassidus or pnimi. Now you need to go a bit further on, probably. You're looking for, you begin a perek aleph over there, I think. Like the yud on the page. On the other side it says 18. Okay. Sorry? I don't know, the page numbering is really strange. I don't know, I'm not quite sure how it works.
It's not even like
no, the 18 is the second page of the test. The Hebrew lettering works like Dafim, like Gemara. It's double page. So Yud means the first side of Yud and the second. That's why on the one side. No, it's chapter hay. We're in chapter hay, which is the fifth chapter. Sorry. Perek, as in Perek hay. He says like this. He says food is called, the spiritual food is called Or Pnimi, a internalized light. Valavushim and garments are called Makifim, are called encompassing lights. Now, I just want to stop here and explain this a little bit because it's a fundamental concept in Chassidus, and actually it's an important point. So whenever we talk about things that are revelations of Hashem, or even within ourselves, there's certain things that are more internalized, that's called pnimi, they absorbed in the experience. And certain things are called makifim, which means they're there, but they surround because they're too high to be internalized, so they at a distance almost, right? Okay. I'll give you an example just so you understand. So what I'm talking about in terms of Hashem's revelation. So when it comes to Tishrei, we have Sukkot, right? So Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in Chassidus explains, is more aliyah. It's more when we elevate ourselves. And then Yom Sukkot is about bringing down the intensity, the light of Hashem, into ourselves. How does it work? So we start with the mitzvah of Sukkot. Mitzvah of Sukkot is all-encompassing, right? It's all-encompassing. So that's when we bring down the levels called makif, the level called encompassing levels, right? Whereas afterwards, when we take the lulav, and the lulav, we wave them, and then we bring it towards our heart. That's the idea of taking these encompassing, transcendent levels, I think you can call them, right? And internalizing it. Okay. Now, generally speaking, makif and pnimi, each one has an advantage over the other. Just generally speaking, right? Sometimes we combine both. We take the both sort of, as we'll soon see. But why is that? The advantage of something being pnimi is that it's internalized, right? So I'll give you an example even for the way the human being works. So we have in ourselves the various powers that we have in our neshama. Some are makif, some are pnimi. So for example, the power of thought is pnimi. It's internalized in the body, right? Where, if I ask you where you think, you tell me your brain, right? Where do you write? With your fingers. Because when Hashem created the world, he created the person. He created the body. The body is a keli. Each part of the body is a vessel for the power that Hashem puts into it. I'm not even talking about godly, specific godly things. I'm talking about regular stuff, right? And each power is able to be absorbed and internalized in the appropriate vessel. Okay? So the power of thinking can be in the brain. The foot cannot think. Why? Because the foot is not a refined enough vessel for thought. The brain is, but the brain is a vessel for thought. So the thought can come, when I say thought, I mean intellectualizing things, right? Cognition. Right? So when a person understands something, he feels he has it, he grasps it, it's there, it's pnimi, right? But then we have things that are not pnimi, that are makif. For example, will, desire. With which part of your body do you want? Doesn't have a place. Why? Because actually it's not internalized. Right? It's not internalized. It's everywhere. Because why is it not internalized? Because it's too strong. It's too high. It transcends. It's not able to come into a keli. It's not able to come into a vessel. It's a transcendent koyach. It's a powerful koyach. It cannot be betzimtzum. It cannot sort of measure into any vessel, even the brain. It's just, it hovers. It hovers and it works remote control. Now, which one is stronger? Makif or pnimi? Anyone? What do you think? So each one has its advantage. Makif is much stronger. That's why Chazal tell us, for example, going back to the person, Ein dover ha'im bifnei ratzon. Nothing stands before the will of a person. If you want something strong enough, you'll get it. You'll overcome all obstacles. I mean internal obstacles. I don't mean if you want to climb up a skyscraper, it's not going to help you because it's impossible. But I'm talking about something, in other words, if you think, so I'll give you an example, right? If you define yourself as being a very average intelligence and you decided you can't learn, for the most part, that's untrue. You might need hard work. They said about the Maram Shik. The Maram Shik was one of the great commentators on the Gemara. He actually wasn't naturally bright, but he had such an unbelievable desire to learn. So he overcame it. He worked harder, right? A mundane example, a more mundane, I'm saying, not Torah. A few years ago, there was a Jewish judge here from the States who was blind. Remember that? It was an amazing guy. See, he's on the one of the Supreme Courts of America, and not the Supreme Court, he's blind. How did he go through law school? Unbelievable. I mean, the way he worked with his memory and the hours he put in. Yeah, it was 10 times as much as everyone else, but he got there. And he's a very, very unbelievable guy. Why? Because the Ratzon. So Ratzon will take you to a place and nothing else can take you to. Understanding something is important is not enough. You have to actually have the will to do it. Right? On the other hand, a will in itself is not enough either. You can want, a lot of people want to do lots of things. Right? It doesn't bear results. It inspires stronger motivation than anything else. Much, much stronger, but doesn't bear results on its own. You need powers from within. You need to be, you need to be really attached to the thing. You need to understand. You need to get passionate about it. You need to feel it, live it, breathe it. Pnimi, right? They tell a story about there was a big chassid called Shmuel Munkus. He was a very, very famous chassid, Alter Rebbe, for other reasons, but I'll just tell a little about him because we're mentioning him. Shmuel Munkus was a very, very great chassid, and he had his very unique way of serving Hashem, and his way of serving Hashem was through simcha and through doing funny things. But he was actually a very, if you just hear the story, you think he's a clown. But actually, he was a very, very serious chassid, a very great chassid, actually. For example, he had a couple of things he would do. They once found him, the Hasidim once found him hanging upside down outside the Alter Rebbe's door. So they said, what's this all about? So he said, because, if you go to the shoe store, you see a shoe hanging. You go through a meat store, you see meat hanging. You go by a Rebbe, you have to see a Hasid hanging, right? So it was a way to teach the Skashas, the Neshvi, lots and lots of stories like that. A very interesting guy. So, but he was an extremely great Hasid. One time, he would come twice a year. He lived in a place called Kalisk, and he would come twice a year to visit the Alter Rebbe. It was a chassid Alter Rebbe. And he was very, very poor. And often he used to walk distances. I mean, the chassidim used to do that. My great-grandfather's father lived in, she used to hear the story of my great-grandfather. He was a chassid at Tzemach Tzedek. He walked from Dokshitz to Lubavitch. It was because he needed to go to the Rebbe. He used to walk. Chassidim used to go in a group. They used to hike, right? Sometimes one time he was going in it was very, very cold. Snow was cold. And he saw a merchant with a, passing by. There was a guy who sold alcohol. He sold mashke. And he said to him, maybe you can give me a ride. Right? Yeah, maybe he knew the guy. I don't know exactly. So he said he's on the direction to Lozhna, which is what the Alter Rebbe says. Maybe I can hop a ride with you. Okay. So he got and he sat there among the barrels. No place. He sat among the barrels. He sees all this unbelievable amount of mashke, right? and he was freezing. So after a while, he tells the guy, he said, do you mind if I have a little sip, just to warm up a little bit? He goes, push it cold, I have a little l'chaim, I'll warm up. He says, no problem, isn't that? Anyway, he got to the Alter Rebbe, and he went into the Alter Rebbe, and he said, he just took a ride with his Baal HaGola, and he learned, like, you know, the Baal Shem Tov says you have to learn from everything, he learned an amazing lesson in serving Hashem. What's the amazing lesson? He said, I sat, the story goes, it was wine, okay. He said, I sat among an amazing amount of mashke, or wine, and I was still cold. And I took one little drop, and I drank it, I became warm. He said, I learned that makif is not enough. That makif is not enough. You need pnimi, you need to internalize something for it to really, really have an effect on you, right? They say the same thing with amunah. For example, our amunah is, by default, is makif. Every yid believes in Hashem, but it's makif. And the amunah can be very strong, and amunah is the strongest thing. Much stronger than our intellect. Sometimes we believe in things that are completely irrational, that we believe in miracles, we believe in all sorts of things, right? And we talk about belief. But belief is a makif, it's stronger than seichel, stronger than intellect, but it's a makif. The proof is, Hasidus brings this famous thing where a ganav can steal and he can offer up a prayer to Hashem to make him successful. Right? It's called ganva pum machtat rachmana karya. How does that happen? The guy is a muni, believes everything comes from Hashem, and you're about to do an act that's against Hashem's will, and you ask Hashem to help you. The answer is, because he has a muna, but the muna is makif. That's how one of our, and muna is makif, by the way, naturally. That's how one of our avodas, one of our missions in life is to internalize a muna, to bring a muna from the level of makif into a level of intellect. Right? So intellect is pnimi, so we have anything, when we think about it, we live it, then it can have an effect on us. Then hopefully one of cognitive dissonance, we won't steal and ask Hashem to help us, right? Okay. I mean, I don't say steal, I mean, we're not stealing, hopefully, but anything. I mean, it's not just stealing. The story is applicable to everyone, not just the ganav, right? We all do things that we know perhaps we shouldn't do, and we still believe in Hashem, right? Okay. So that's the story of makif and pnimi. So the same thing is with Torah and mitzvahs, actually, on one level. The Torah is pnimi and mitzvahs are makif. You need both, right? Clothing is makif. Clothing is very powerful. Clothing has a very powerful effect on person, but you can't live only from clothing, right? Because clothing comes from the idea of makif. And that's mitzvahs, and mitzvahs is important. We need the makif. We need the will. We need those things that come from makif. They bring down a higher light sometimes. Whereas Torah is pnimi. Torah is Hashem's Torah. Hashem is enclosed in the Torah, but it comes down to our context, and we learn Torah, but that's more pnimi. Okay? So that's the two things. Now he comes and he says, but Torah actually is different. Torah is actually both. And this is his chiddush in this last bracket. It's like this. He says, V'lochein omur azal. That's what Chazal tell us. She Talmud Torah shokul keneged kol ha-mitzvahs. That the Talmud Torah, learning Torah, corresponds to all the mitzvahs. Now the simple pshata that is, because if you don't learn, you can't do mitzvahs. You have to learn in order to be able to know what to do, right? So therefore, learning Torah kind of encompasses all the mitzvahs. Okay. But he gives a deeper pshat. He says, because fisha mitzvah same levushim levat, the mitzvahs are only garments. They're only the idea of makif. V'ha Torah himozin, Torah is food, but gam levush. L'nefesh ha-maskeles, shem islabash, but it's also a garment. For the neshama that is thinking and enclosed in the Torah, be'iyuno v'limudo, when you get lost in it, when you analyze it, right? Like we said before, Torah is pnimi, we internalize the concept, but we also get lost in the concept. We grab Torah, but the Torah also grabs us. So actually it's both, it's pnimi and makif. And then he says, the kol sheken, how much more so, kishemoytzi bepiv bedibur, when you bring out in your mouth, when you verbalize the Torah, which is really what we call the mitzvah of Torah. See, Torah has also a mitzvah aspect to it. I think I mentioned this last week briefly, that Torah actually has two ideas to it. There's the idea of mastering knowledge of Torah, right? That is an important idea. And then there's the idea of saying the words of Torah, right? It's a mitzvah to learn. Besides the idea of, it's two separate things. There's a concept to grasp Hashem through intellect. And there's a concept of fulfilling the mitzvah of learning Torah. And they're different. Just give you a halachic difference, for example, consequence. So for example, halachically, actually, you only really fulfill the mitzvah of Torah if you say the words or listen to someone talking, right? There's an interesting halachic discussion whether you actually fulfill the mitzvah part of Limud HaTorah if you listen to a recording. And many pasukim say you're not. You're actually not fulfilling the mitzvah of learning Torah. You still, but it's still a worthwhile experience because you're learning ideas. You, like if you go in a car, you can't learn Torah, right? Whatever the case is, and you're listening to amazing shir that you couldn't access in person, right? And you're still fulfilling the idea of mastering knowledge of Torah. Maybe you're not doing the actual mitzvah of Torah at that point.
Why?
Because the mitzvah of Torah every mitzvah has to be expressed by gashmias, physically. There's a mitzvah to enunciate the words.
Oh, to enunciate.
Yeah. So the ours is an opinion that you do it through listening. I know, so you be here, right? There is such an opinion. They say listening is not... In other words, I saw an opinion once like that says when you listen to a recording, you're still fulfilling the mitzvah of Torah. Different when you only think Torah. Like, for example, sometimes you can't do the mitzvah of Torah. For example, let's say you're learning a very deep Gemara or something, or you're learning a deep idea, and you need to give it some thought. In fact, you might be going through a process where if you start talking, even talking to yourself, you're going to confuse yourself. You just need to think, which is okay. And that's what learning Torah encompasses. At that moment, you're doing something different than the mitzvah of learning Torah. You're just doing the mastering knowledge of Torah, which is okay. And even then, it's actually makif and panimi because it's still you grasping it and it's grasping you. But he says, especially when you speak Torah, or listen perhaps according to some opinions, right? When you listen to a human being, that's different because we have a principle in halacha like kiddush, right? When you listen to someone talk, it's like you're saying yourself. But that doesn't work with a recording normally. Like you can't listen to someone make kiddush or avdallah. You know that. That's why you can't listen to avdallah over the phone. Because it's not the voice of the person. Even a microphone is a problem. Right? Because it's not actually the actual voice, which is another interesting halachic discussion. But nevertheless, but you're still learning Torah. But okay,
hearing aid
is a whole shaila, but sometimes there's no choice. Hearing aid could be different. There's all kinds of discussions about hearing aid, and also if someone has if they can't hear without a hearing aid, then there's no point in taking it out because. You won't hear it, right? Anyway, that's an interesting halachic discussion. We'll leave that for now. But okay, so he says, especially when you bring Torah in your mouth when you say it, so you're actually doing a mitzvah. Shehevel hadibur, the actual breath of the speech, nase b'chinas or maki, becomes an encompassing light, a transcendence light. So, bottom line, he just added a little bit of depth to the greatness of learning. Again, even after this, it doesn't mean you don't do mitzvahs. Mitzvahs have advantages anyway that Torah don't have. The concept of obedience, the concept of making a dwelling place for Hashem. Every mitzvah connects us to Hashem in a different way. So obviously we need to do mitzvahs. And anyways, if we learn Torah and don't do mitzvahs, it damages the Torah. So this is not to downgrade mitzvahs. It's to upgrade Torah learning. That's the point here, right? And to say how important it is to learn Torah. Anyway, these are the two chapters, famous two chapters of Tanya, chapter 4 and chapter 5. Where he explains the greatness of actually learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs. Not that it makes us closer to Hashem or makes us more aware of Hashem, actually bonds us with Hashem and we become one with Hashem. Amazing thing. Okay. Ready? Perek Vav, chapter 6. So the last four chapters, we've been talking about the Nefesh HaLakis. And now we're going to go to more familiar territory. We're going to talk about the Nefesh HaBamis. I mean, more familiar for us, not for him, right? The animal soul. Okay, it says like this. Hine. I'm just giving you a little warning before we do this chapter. I don't know if we're going to get to this part today, but nevertheless. Here starts the tough part of Tanya, right? Where he talks levels which can become overwhelming. But as I explained at the very beginning, that's fine. That doesn't matter, right? Because it makes a dent. So he's going to discuss here because the Nefesh HaBamis, the animal soul, comes from the world of Klippa and Sitra Achra. It's ungodly, right? And in this chapter, he's going to a little bit define what ungodly means. So just like we have the 10, we're going to learn in a minute, just like we have the 10 powers of the Nefesh HaLakis, so we have the 10 powers of the Nefesh HaBamis, right? And we have the levushim, the garments of Nefesh HaBamis. So just like the garments of the Nefesh HaLakis is thought, speech, and action of Torah and mitzvahs, the thought, speech, and action of the Nefesh HaBamis is the thought, speech, and action of unholy stuff. Right? Klippa. What he's going to come to an idea is And this is the part that seems quite sharp and tough, but it's the truth nevertheless, that the definition of klipa, now the different levels of klipa, we're going to talk about that, but what's the definition of klipa? So sometimes in our mind, we think klipa means unholy, tumma, klipa ach, sitra achra. So it means things which are against the will of Hashem. Now that's true. Everything that's against the will of Hashem is absolutely klipa, right? But actually, that's not the way it is. Anything that is not for Hashem is klipa. It's a big difference there. You get that? Right? If I do something and it doesn't have a godly purpose, it's klipa. Right? Now, who of us are on the level that everything we do 24 hours a day is for the sake of Hashem? There have been unique individuals that's the way it is, but most of us are not like that. Ultimately, that's the Beinoni. Right? Who overcomes any temptation to do anything else. He might want to do something, but he doesn't do anything. But the Tanya is about moving towards a Beinoni. Now, we're going to learn this. So again, it's the same thing we always talk about. Number one, it's the mindset that we have to have. Hashem knows that we're normal, and Hashem knows how He designed us. And He knows that at the moment, most of us probably are not going to get to the level where every single thing we do in the 24 hours of our day is for the sake of Hashem, right? Example, like, if we all ate the way it says in Tanya, we wouldn't need any health plans. I'm saying if we started out our life by eating the way it says in Tanya, we wouldn't need any health plans. We'd never eat in excess. We'd never indulge. We'd just eat what we need to be strong and healthy to serve Hashem. That's all, right? Okay? Halavai. And same thing with speaking, same thing with entertainment. Now, doesn't mean recreation is a bad thing. We'll learn. Everything that's neutral can be elevated to Kedusha if it's done for the sake of Hashem and not for our own personal interest, right? But it's important not to sugarcoat this. In other words, it's important to know that is the truth. And it's a goal up there. Because why? Number one, as we always say, when we learn this stuff and we understand the truth the way it is in its entirety, undiluted, it gives us more of a push to grow and to take the next step in our context, where we're up to. And also it makes a dent. I'll tell you an interesting thing. If you learn a lot of this stuff, you keep learning it, it makes the following dent. A nice story. I just told recently in someone, I said, I'm not sure if it's a true story, not a true story, but it's a true vort. And then someone told me, no, he knows the person who told the story, what happened to him. Okay, it could be. It still doesn't mean nowadays that it's 100% true, but people imagine stories, but it's a nice vort. So the vort goes, you know how, it's a true vort, that's what I'm saying, that was a bocher in New York, he went on mifzoyim. So you know how the bocherim go every Friday, they go and put on tefillin on people, they go, anyway. So when the mifzoyim first came out, this is the 70s, I think it was, like, you know, around there, 60s, 70s. Started this mass movement of bochum going out, especially on a Friday afternoon when they were after learning, and some people, are you Jewish, and putting on tefillin with them, and asking, you know, women to light Shabbos candles, and so on and so forth. And in those days, they used to meet sometimes older people who came from Europe a lot. I mean, that's unfortunately getting less and less, but people who had an old connection to Torah mitzvahs, even though, you know, without judging them, of course, currently maybe they didn't. Anyway, they met two bochum, one of them, and they met an old yid. Are you Jewish? Yeah, of course. I'm about to start talking Yiddish to him and all that. And where are you from? Lubavitch. Says, I hate Lubavitch. Lubavitch? What's wrong with Lubavitch? What's the problem? A non-religious guy. He says, I learned in Lubavitch, meaning not referring to the old Lubavitch in Europe, the original Lubavitch, right? He had learned in the yeshiva that the Rebbe Rashab had made, or one of those yeshivas that he made in the old, right, with the real intense, real Hasidic Jews learned, right? And they learned all the stuff and much more. And then after the thing, he went off. He went off the derech. He lost Torah mitzvahs. He says, because of Lubavitch, I've tried my best to enjoy this world, and I can't do an avera with a geshmak. There's always something niggling me. I can't have a free rein to do what I want and enjoy it. Ever since I learned Lubavitch, you ruined my life. It's a beautiful word, right? In other words, even if we, obviously, when we learn the stuff, it at least motivates us to do more mitzvahs, and motivates us to stay away from things that are pi halacha we shouldn't do, makes us grow more, takes the next step, whatever, that's true. But even if it just accomplishes, sometimes we have that mindset and we think about it, it accomplishes that we think twice before we indulge, Even if we don't end up doing it, that's also good. That means we in a different wavelength, different reality. Understand? So I'm just bringing that. I'm just bringing the two sides of this, because when you learn this, you say, "Oh gosh, like, you know, who's that? Like, who's he talking to?" Kind of thing, right? Okay. So let's have a look. What he says? He says like this: "V'hinei zel umazeh osolakim." There's a pasuk that says that Hashem designed this corresponding to this, meaning that whatever Hashem created in the world of kedusha, He also created in the world of klipa. That's what basically means, right? So therefore, ki kamoi shenefesh olakis, just like the godly soul, kelula me'eser spheres kedushos, incorporate the 10 spheres, which are called 10 holy spheres, umislabeshes bishloisha levushim kedushim, and enclothe itself in the 3 holy garments. Right? That's what nefesh olakis is. That's what we've been learning for the last few chapters. Kacha nefesh the sitra achra, so to the nefesh, the soul, which is a soul that comes from the sitra achra. The nefesh abamis is sitra achra. By the way, this word sitra achra also brings out what I've just been saying to you. What does sitra achra mean? The other side, right? Again, I think I said this at the beginning. In Tanya, when Chassidus generally uses 2 descriptions for things that are unholy. Sitra achra or klippa. Klippa means a skin. The idea of calling something unholy skin is because just like a skin hides the fruit, so to anything klippa means it's concealing godliness. Right? Godliness is not obvious there. And second of all, we also call it sitra achra, which means it's the other side. What does it mean the other side? Because the way of Hashem, the way of holiness, the godly way, is called in Kabbalah Sitra to Kedusha, the side of holiness. Right? So anything that's not holy is klipa, is sitra achra. But in other words, it's like I said before, in other words, not that it's against, even if it's not against Kedusha, it's just not Kedusha. It's already klipa. It's already sitra achra. Right? So our nefesh abam is our animal soul, which is our conscious self, really, as the Alter Rebbe says later, is sitra achra miklipas noiga. It comes from the level of klipa, which is called klipas noiga, which we're going to learn about later on. And that neshama, hamalubashes bedam ha'odom, is enclosed in the blood of the person, right? Our blood carries the animal soul, because our blood is our life force, and that's what the animal soul is, to give us physical life, basically. Right? So that nefesh, that soul, its headquarters in the heart, as he says later, which we'll talk about later. Godly souls in the brain, nefesh lekis in the heart, and nefesh abamis in the heart. So that nefesh is also klula be'eser kisrin de misavusa. It also incorporates 10, he calls it 10 crowns of tumah, of impurity. What is that? So now take notes how this is going to work. When he introduced the nefesh lekis and he talked about the 10 powers, so, okay, just before we go. So, there's 10 powers of the godly soul, there's 10 powers of the animal soul. So what does that tell you in your mind right away? What did we just learn? We have 3 intellectual powers, 7 emotional powers. That must be the same thing in the nefesh abamis, right? In the animal soul. However, you'll notice now an interesting thing happens. The nefesh alakis, when he described the godly soul, he started with the 3 intellectual. And you could say parents, and they give birth to the emotion, then he described a bit of love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, which is the primary emotions, right? Nefesh abamis, he turns it around. He starts with the emotions. Let's see, and we'll explain why in a minute. And makes also one other change. You'll soon see in a second. Shehein, sheva midos rois. Nefesh abamis has 7 bad character traits. Right? Bad chesed, bad gvura, bad tiferes, and so on. Where does that come from? As he said in the first chapter, habois ma'arba yisoides haroi manal. They come from the 4 foundations that are in the soul, right? Just like everything physical is made up of fire, water, wind, and earth, there's a spiritual fire, water, wind, and earth in the neshama, and that gives rise to the 7 negative emotions. So I gave examples in the first chapter. So like arrogance comes from fire, indulgence comes from water, laziness comes from earth, and so on, right? That kind of thing. And he says, v'seichel, so that's the 7 emotions. And also the nefesh abami says, v'seichel hamoylidon, the seichel gives birth to them. Hanechlak nisholosh, which is 3 things, just like the nefesh alakis. Shein chochma, mida, bina, vedas. Mokar hamidas, they are the source of the emotions. Ki hamidas hein lefi erech haseichel. Because the emotions of the nefesh abamis are expressed comparative to the development of the intellect. Now, what does he mean by this? Let's just explain. So, there's a fundamental... The nefesh al-akis, nefesh al-bamis, both have 10 powers. Intellect, 3 intellect, 7 emotional. The 7th of the emotion is malchus, which goes already, connects to the 3 garments, which is machshava, dibur, and maaseh, right? However, there's a fundamental difference between nefesh al-akis and nefesh al-bamis. The nefesh al-akis doesn't naturally have emotions, meaning it has it intrinsically, right? But there will never be, or very rarely be, an emotion of the nefesh al-akis unless there's first intellect, right? No one is going to have a natural love for Hashem, or for Torah, or for mitzvahs, if he doesn't think about it, if he doesn't learn about it. That's why in Perek Gimel, when he talked about it, the emphasis there was that Chochma Bina is mother and father. Chochma and Bina give birth to the Midas. That's why it's called mother and father. That's why the Midas are called children. Intellects called parents, right? Yeah? So in other words, it actually gives birth to it because it's simply non-existent without the Seichel. And that's what, like the Rambam says, how can you command someone to love Hashem? That's he either does or doesn't, and naturally people actually don't love Hashem on the conscious level. We're not born loving Hashem. We're born loving ice cream pretty quickly, but we're not, right? Not. So it comes because, says Rambam, because we have to Hashem alekecha, you should love Hashem your God, means you have to learn about it. Think about him, think about his greatness, think about what a life without God looks like, and so on and so forth. And then you'll come to be attracted to it. You'll give birth to an emotion, right? Nefesh HaBamis is different. Nefesh HaBamis is animalistic. Animals are emotional beings. They have instinctive emotion. Right? That's why he started off with the emotion. In a Nefesh HaBamis, we have natural, instinctive, impulsive midas. If you don't teach a person anything, they will still have midas. Right? They will still cry when they don't like something. They will still be attached to their mother when they, even before they can think anything, right? So what's the midas? Just like an animal, right? They can get angry, they can get upset. There's emotion, there's feeling. Without seichel. What does the seichel do? What does the intellect do? It expresses and directs the midas. So for example, and this is what he's going to explain. And that's why the emotions are different compared to where the intellect is up to, right? So a small kid likes a toy car, right? Has to have a toy car, desires a toy car. And the big man desires a Tesla, has to have a Tesla because someone else has it, right? They're very different, but they're not so different. Why does the one want a toy, the one wants a car? Because when you mature, you understand that a toy car isn't worth nothing and a car is worth more. Is that so? The maturity of, or the sophistication of the emotion is different compared to where the intellect is up to. It's the same emotion, it's the same desire, same indulgence. If that's what it is, I'm not talking about when someone buys a car because they need to get around, right? Or it's convenient, or it's more effective, whatever I'm saying. But you know, if it comes from jealousy, or it comes from showing off, whatever the bad midah is, right? The child has exactly the same bad midah. It's just with the child. It's a toy car that someone else had. Here, it's a big car that someone else had. Right? A little child wants a lolly, and an adult wants to eat in a fancy restaurant. Okay, because they're more sophisticated. The taste is more sophisticated. They understand the difference. They're connoisseurs. This one, that one. Whatever the case is, right? It's different. But the midah is the same. The midah was always there. Yeah? That's what he says now. And that's only because it's actually not given birth by the seichel. It's exposed and directed by the seichel. And because it's exposed and directed by the seichel, it also can be, I mean, we use our nefesh al-akis for this, but even the nefesh al-bamis can understand. We can sometimes even rationally, I mean, even in the world where people don't have a nefesh al-akis necessarily, can also use their brains to control their midas. They can do that. Not necessarily to make them fully godly, but at least to control, to be healthy. right? So the person can understand that it's unhealthy to eat so much chocolate cake, therefore you won't. Okay? But that's, again, it's still the seichel directing the midas. Children can't do that. Children are self-controlled because they have a very undeveloped intellect. That's why. Right? The nefesh shalakis can go a step further. The nefesh shalakis can actually give birth to a new midah, not just controlling the nefesh abamis emotion, but can actually give birth to nefesh shalakis emotion, like love of Hashem and fear of Hashem and things like that. Those are new midahs, not just directing the animal midahs. It's new midahs. Because that's given birth by the seichel, by the intellect of the nefesh shalakis. Right? So look what he says. He says like this. He says, Ki hamidos is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines on the bottom. Ki hamidos hein lifi erech haseichel. The midos are the way, are what's the word I'm looking for? They are in line with the how sophisticated the seichel is. Ki hakotan, because a small child, choyshek v'oyev dvarim ketanim, desires and loves small things, p'chusei erech, with little value, lifi shesichlei katan. Because his brain is very small, the kotzer underdeveloped, the hasig dvarim bekorim yosemem, to understand the value of things that are more expensive. V'chein, also, negative reactions. That was chesed. Now let's talk about gvura, which is like anger and these things, right? V'chein miskais u'miskatzef midvarim ktanim. It also gets very upset and very angry from very stupid things. Right? The world came to an end because the little toy thing fell apart, right? Okay. V'chein, I mean, adults there too, but in a different way. V'chein bispoiris, and also with teferis, which sometimes means like, teferis means beauty, so someone in the bad sense, it means like, showing yourself off and that kind of thing. Bashar midos and other midos. So therefore, with the child that's much underdeveloped, still there, even though there's not much seichel there, that's because it's there, but in a small, under-sophisticated way, because of the seichel thing. So seichel doesn't give birth to it, it just directs it. Then he says, V'eser b'chinois eilu. Okay. So now it's just like the nefesh shalakis. These 10 levels, hatzemeyos, he calls them, the impure ones, when a person thinks them, or speaks them, speaks about them, or oise, or he does them, behaves according to them. So a person thinks, he thinks hatred, he feels hatred, he maintains the thought of hatred, right? And or and then he speaks about it. And then chas v'shalom accident, he hurts the other person, right? Then what happens is, Hare machshavtoi shebemoichoi. Then what's happening is, his thought in his brain, v'dibure shebepiv, his speech in his mouth, v'koyach ha'maisa shebeyodov, and the power of action in his hands, v'shar evorim, or his other organs, nikroim levushei mesav, they're called impure garments. Just like when you speak Torah, and you think Torah, and you do mitzvahs, the Torah's mitzvahs called the holy garments of thought, speech, and action, that dress up your soul. Over here, it's the other way around. It's the actions, the thoughts, the speeches that are negative and unholy that become the clothing of your soul, the clothing of your nefesh habamis, the clothing of your animal soul. Esu b'chinas elu hatzmeish shemislavshes ben, that your unholy midos and unholy intellect are getting dressed in these garments b'shas ma'ase at the time you're doing oy dibur, or the speech oy machshava, or the thought. Yeah, clear? Yeah. Now, obviously, why is he going, why does he sort of, just to understand where this all headed, right? Alter Rebbe is really unpacking for us in great, great detail the spiritual anatomy of the soul, right? That's what he's doing, essentially, right? But why is he doing that, right? Because this is a book called Sefer Shel Beinyanim. It's a book called The Book of the Beinyanim, which means where the aspirational goal is the one of a Beinyanim. Which we know what that means. That means basically to control our thought, speech, and action. So you have to be conscious and understand and be aware how you work. What's coming from the nefesh alakis? What's coming from the nefesh abamis? Right? What, you know, what we need to be conscious. What is? So we need to know what to deal with. And also we need to know what is our actual nefesh abamis and what is the garments of nefesh abamis. Because basically what he's going to land up in eventually is, right, as we go through all of this, he's going to land up that a beinoni is someone that actually hasn't transformed essentially his 10 powers of the nefesh habamis, but he's taken charge of the levushim of the garments. So basically, a beinyani is someone who's always in control of his machshava, dibur, and maisa, thought, speech, and action. Right? So I'll just give you an example. Like, one of the things, by the way, this is also like in modern psychology, this is one of the like not the nonsenses that is bandied around nowadays, which you'll find sometimes even in Jewish writings, which is just taken from secular stuff, right? Because, and I'll tell you why it happens, and I'll tell you why I'm bringing it in, because that will bring clarity to this. Because there's a big movement today of, as we talked about on Thursday morning, right, of self-acceptance and self-love. And I mean in the bad way, right? And in order to do that, then you have to make that everything that happens to me is good, because if I'm so good, then everything with me is good, right? Which is complete nonsense. Because, so for example, one of the things I talk about is, there's no such thing as a bad emotion. That's ridiculous. Of course there is. There are neutral emotions, pain and that kind of stuff. Then there's bad emotions. Hatred is a bad emotion. Anger is a bad emotion. Jealousy is a bad emotion. Right? It's against Torah. What do you mean? Of course it's a bad emotion. Now, what people fail to understand is that Hashem divined us with the Nefesh HaKis and the Nefesh HaBamis. And of course, our Nefesh HaBamis is a normal part of who we are. It doesn't mean it's holy. We have to take control over it. Now, what does it mean to take control of it? So later on in Tanya, for example, right, he says, what happens to the Begini when suddenly, instinctively, an emotion expresses itself? Which is like the initial thought. Someone says something really bad to me, and I feel the anger, right? A Begini will also feel the anger. That's what's going to happen. Because a Begini hasn't transformed the Nefesh HaBamis. Tzadik has, but not a Begini. Which means he still has the seichel and the midos of the Nefesh HaBamis. More refined, more controlled, more habituated, all good. But it's still there, right? It's still there. So he might feel, right? So what's the story? So now has he done an Averis? The Altarebbe says no. Because that initial thought of anger or hatred is normal. That's what Hashem did to us. He gave us that challenge. Maintaining it is an Avera. Okay. So the Beinoni's job and our aspiration, right, as we work through this, is to push it away right away. Docheyu, as he says later, docheyu b'shtei yadayim, right? So I'm saying this is what they don't understand today, like I talk all this rubbish, because of course this thing's bad emotions, because Hashem gave us bad emotions for a reason, to work with them. He gave us a struggle. That's what pain is. It's about our struggle. Struggle means you have within you good and bad. It doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you a bad person if you're not conscious of where the bad is coming from and you don't try to deal with it. That's what makes you. That's what causes you spiritual damage. I mean, ultimately, you're never a bad person because you always have the bintaliyid and all that. But I'm saying even consciously, right? So when a person has a thought of a bad emotion, it's a bad emotion. It's just normal. Being normal is not bad. It's not a bad thing. In other words, it's normal to have bad emotions. But they're bad. Why do I need to know that? Why can't I just go into fairyland and say everything's good? Because if I say it's good, then I'm going to hang on to it.
Does that mean you shouldn't be feeling it?
Someone's you should.
Someone's made me angry.
Right.
I'm not allowed to acknowledge that I'm angry.
What do you mean to acknowledge? Yes.
Well, to myself.
Yeah, and you have to, so yes, exactly. So the first thought should be, I'm a normal person. It has made me angry. I'm feeling the anger, and now what's my plan to get rid of it? Hard. I'm saying that's the goal, right?
Never said it was easy.
Huh?
Never said it was easy.
Yeah.
I'm just wanting to say that you shouldn't feel it.
Some emotions, for example, are not bad. They just can be damaging if done in excess. For example, grief. Grief is different to anger, right? Grief is a normal emotion. And it's not Hashem gave us, therefore Hashem gave us the shiver to get through it and all that kind of stuff, right? But even then, it's still a toxic emotion if you hang on to it. And therefore you have to work through it. And work through it doesn't mean it's going to go away by Beini. It means it's under control. It's not going to be expressed in thought, speech, and action. That's different, right? But it's important to know where things come from.
You can feel it as long as you're an expressor.
Well, you're supposed to grow it even internally, eventually, right? That's the thing. And that can sound as hard. That's why it says, like, if you have an anxious feeling, anxiety is also not a good emotion. I'm not talking about clinical anxiety. I'm talking about even, right? That's why sometimes you need someone else. You have to go talk to someone else. Sometimes you have to learn. How many times did the Rebbe write letters that if a person's anxious, they should learn Shara B'Tochen, right? Not once, but more than once. Because it's hard. Of course it's hard. We worry. As human beings, we worry. That's normal people, right? And that's what we have to learn. The Shara Bitachon, and learn about Emunah, and understand Hashgacha Pratis. It's a lifelong journey, right? Yeah, the aspirational goal is a Beinoni. So the Beinoni is able to control the worry even instantaneously. But the mindset is that as it is, it's not a good thing, and I have to work to get rid of it. As long as you work to get rid of it, even if it takes you 10 years, it's okay. I mean, right? Because it's a work in progress. And sometimes just knowing that knowing that's the nefesh habamis is good, right? Like the worst thing where people never change is when they talk themselves into it that what they're feeling is good. Right? They talk themselves into it what they're feeling is actually holy and good. They convince themselves. Right? You find this with ego, right? If I feel threatened by someone, we all do because we're all normal, right? But the biggest mistake I can make here is talk myself into that I'm right. You know what I'm saying?
Because
you'll never move. Sometimes I can't move now. I mean, there's been times where, you know, I've told someone, like, you know, at the moment, my ego doesn't handle this. But I recognize it's not coming from my neshama, it's coming from my ego. Right now, it's just, I'm not up to that level yet where I can handle this particular thing or whatever the case is, right? Okay? But it's on the agenda. But you got to know where it comes from. The biggest downfall of people and institutions sometimes when you talk yourself into it that you're righteous. It's normal to have a nefesh habamis. So I'm sure I've told some of you the story before, but I might have even told it at the beginning of the Tanya. I'll tell it again in which the case I haven't. So I heard there was a chassid called Ramatl Kazlina. He was a great chassid. He came from Russia and lived in Israel. He used to come to Australia in the earlier, he's passed away already. Came to Australia even when I was a bocher in Melbourne. And I got to know him, a very, very precious Jew. Knew how to fabrain well, he would tell stories. He was just an amazing person. He came here also a few times. So he once told me a story. He said there was a beautiful story. This is like a real Hasid approach. And this is why we learn Tanya, just to become honest of where we are. Like to get clarity, first of all. That's what the Alter Rebbe is doing for us now. He's unpacking the Nefesh HaLakis, Nefesh HaBamis, so you know where things are coming from. So he says there was a Hasid in Russia. Under communism, you know, every guy had to work there. I mean, you couldn't, like, there was no unemployment in Russia. You had to have a job, right? So this guy, he was an old chassid. He had a factory, and he employed people. I don't know what they produced, but he had a factory. And he employed a few other chassidim, also big chassidim, who were, you know, working because that was the law. You had to be. Some of them probably would have been teachers or yeshivas, but everyone had to have a proper job, as I say, as they call it, right? One day during lunchtime, he comes out and he sees his employees in the lunch break, they're sitting and having a fabregen. So he explodes. He screams at them like a rant for 10 minutes. You guys crazy? You're going to send us to Siberia? You know, this is illegal. You're learning Torah, you're singing in Gunim if we get caught. Gives them, like, he just explodes. Finishes his rant, leaves the room. Come back 5 minutes later with a bottle of mashke. He says, here, fabregen weiter. Keep. Here's for your fabrengen. He said, look at him, if his posh had gone crazy. You just finished screaming at us, right? This is a crazy thing to do. And you come back and you encourage us? He says, what don't you understand? He says, very simple. I have a nefesh habamis. My nefesh habamis is scared. So I scream. At the moment, I can't control it. So I scream at you. I finished. I left the room, and then I remembered that when I was a little child, my father educated me, whenever you see chassidim for brain, you have to give mashke. So what? You have a mashke? That's my nefesh halakis. I'm two people. it's told in a very funny way, but it's such a fundamental idea, this. Right? Because that's the first step to growth, being honest. And in the context of how chassidus describes it, is how you honest? Understand you have a nefesh habamis, understand your nefesh halakis. Your nefesh habamis, by the way, comes from klipa, but it's not wrong to have one. You couldn't exist if you didn't have a nefesh habamis. That's the way Hashem designed us. But it is klipa, and you've got to deal with it. It's something that hides, conceals godliness. Therefore, you have to know how the nefesh habamis works, how your nefesh halakis works, and you also have to know what comes from your nefesh habamis. And know when something comes, either by yourself or by talking to someone else, knowing this is nefesh habamis, not nefesh halakis stuff. And then, now what can I do about it? What level am I at? Where am I up to? What can I do about it? Because sometimes it's like the Rebbe used to say that people have a Yetzer Hara, which obviously the Yetzer Hara is an outcome of the Nefesh HaBamis, right? And sometimes the Nefesh HaBamis tutzach onen azayd nezubitza, which means the Nefesh HaBamis gets dressed in a silk kapota, you know, like a chassidic. Comes very holy, sometimes presents itself very holy. You've got to go scream at that person, you've got to stand up. Are you sure? Nefesh HaKis, Nefesh HaBamis. Are you sure? How do you know? Think about it, reflect upon it. Sometimes it looks like it's coming from Nefesh HaKis, it's actually coming from Nefesh HaBamis. Maybe you need to do something about it, tone it down, control it, get rid of it, whatever level you're up to. But first you've got to know how it's all functioning. You want to ask me?
A number of things.
But very bekitzer, very briefly, the Yetzer Hara is, see, the Nefesh HaBamis is a different type of klipa. It's neutral klipa, but it's still klipa, right? So essentially, having a shmooze for no reason, not for the sake of Hashem, or eating mamash not for Hashem Shemaim, that's Nefesh HaBamis. That's not a Yetzer Hara. I'm eating kosher, I'm making a bracha, I'm more or less eating healthy, I'm not overindulging, whatever, right? The Yetzer Hara then takes it to a negative way and actually does something that's forbidden. Once you do things that are forbidden.
And what's the opposite?
No, so the Yetzer Hara is not neutral. The Yetzer Hara is the...
What's the
Yetzer Hara? The Nefesh HaBamis. It's an outcome of Nefesh HaBamis, yes. It's still the same ego, but in other words, if you let your Nefesh HaBamis... Nefesh HaBamis can be transformed to good, it can be used for good. Right? It's a neutral clipper, but it's... If you leave it without really working with it, it will descend into Yetzer Hara.
I'm driving my Yetzer
Hara. Your
I'm fuming.
Your untamed Nefesh HaBamis. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what the Alter Rebbe was saying. We need to work with the Nefesh HaBamis so that we stop the Yetzer Hara in its tracks.
Sorry to
hog them. No, we're finishing anyways. Yeah, so I tell it quickly because actually it came up in Perek Aleph, I don't remember it, but when he first introduced the Nefesh HaBamis, he said Nefesh HaBamis is the root of bad emotion, toxic emotions, which come from the very makeup of the Nefesh HaBamis. So just like everything physical has fire, water, etc. So there's a spiritual fire, water, dust, and wind that is the makeup of everything, including Nefesh HaBamis. Since the Nefesh HaBamis has natural bad midas, they come they come from the makeup of the Nefesh HaBamis, which is fire, water, wind, and dust. And each one, and he gave examples in Perek Aleph of the different type of bad midas that come from different yesodas. And then they organize themselves in seven midas, but they're actually coming from the four foundations. Okay.